A quick story from 2 summers ago. The airline canceled my flight from Chicago to Champaign, and as I waited in line for a voucher for the bus, I recognized a man who'd been on my earlier flight, the first leg of my trip home. He seemed like a friendly sort. We struck up a conversation and walked across the airport to the bus together, holding our vouchers. He told me he was a minister, a reverend. Fine. We boarded the minibus. I walked on first, foolishly I now recognize, took a window seat. He sat beside me. And once the doors of the bus closed and we took off, he began to tell me all about himself, how he'd been to heaven, seen God, how the trees spoke to him. He counseled me that I needed to free myself from the yoke of sin as he placed his hands around my neck. And on the many-mile trip, I did not change seats. I was terrified. I honestly thought that he might kill me if I tried to move. As I write this, Elizabeth Smart is home safe, but there are questions about why she did not leave her captors when she ate with them at a restaurant, when she attended an outdoor gathering, when the man who called himself Emmanuel was in jail. Setting aside any brainwashing claims, if a grown-up fears for her life on a bus, you can bet a young girl fears for her life in a restaurant, in the open, in the custody of one. Why we care about this, her ability to leave, is based on language in many a kidnapping statute, that the act must be a restraint or a detention against the will of the victim. The reporter's questions about Elizabeth Smart's ability to leave, then, go to the heart of what we instinctively know kidnapping to be. The good news is that courts have recognized the way a victim acts in failing to reach out for help, failing to leave, for example, won't necessarily quash a criminal charge. The United States Supreme Court wrote that kidnapping, on the federal level at least, includes not just physical restraint, but mental restraint to confine the victim against her will. But it's a troubling case that led the court to that conclusion, one from over 60 years ago. In it, a couple convinced a 15-year-old from Utah to join them in a polygamous marriage by telling her that it was God's will. A trial court found them guilty of kidnapping, but the Supreme Court reversed. She was perfectly free to leave, the court found. No evidence of physical restraint or mental restraint. A troubling decision, of course, because the victim was just 15. It may have been that case that led to language in the Utah kidnapping statute, a focus in cases involving teenage children on the parent's will, and why in the Utah child kidnapping statute there's no mention of against the will of the victim at all. This is not to say that the law would protect someone like me, an adult who feels held captive on a bus. I likely have no viable claim against the man who called himself a reverend. But what's really important is that it should protect a girl taken from her home one night, no matter if she ran from her captors or not. I'm Amy Gutt.